You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get Civical.
This is the podcast that breaks down politics, government structure, and dives into the context of current events, but in a super fun way. I'm Lizzie Stewart, comedian, feminist, and political junkie.
And I'm Arden Walentowski, former Senate intern, campaign staffer, and political strategist.
In this episode, we are talking about Roper v. Simmons.
So grab your Eighth Amendment.
And let's get civical. Hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome back to Let's Get Civical. I am Lizzie Stewart.
And I am Arden Walentowski.
And what's to say? What's to say?
Oh.
By the time this airs, I will have gone to Texas. So shout out me and Texas and the South.
Woohoo.
What else is going on? Spring is not springing. It's rainy, rainy. Oh, also, by the time this airs, an eclipse will have happened.
Oh, that's so true.
That's on Monday.
Uh-huh. Are you doing anything for the eclipse? Is this why you're going to Texas?
No. No. Okay. It's my niece's birthday this coming weekend. So
is she going three?
She's two.
Two.
She's only two.
I was trying to remember her size at the wedding. And yes, two.
She's too.
Yes,
too. But we will be flying back, but I think we land before the eclipse happens. So I'll be back in New York. So we'll see. We'll see.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's what's going on with me. I'm a continental US traveler once again. Can't wait to be delayed there and coming back. So that's what's going on with me.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I am having we've talked about tons of computer problems I am having, and so I'm hoping to get those fixed this week.
When technology betrays us, it really betrays us.
It really betrays us. Hopefully they get fixed this week. Really can't even fathom giving up my computer for any length of time. What would I even do?
Totally. Does Caroline have a computer?
She does, but A, it's a PC.
Uh-oh.
Don't even know how that would work.
Sure.
Also, all of my work stuff is like logged into this computer. It would just be an utter nightmare. I mean, I would have to do it. I have another small old computer that I used to work off of that I had refurbished that I could use, but again, like
not the vibe.
Not the vibe.
Not ideal.
Not the vibe. Like, even in the Zoom, it's giving me a thumbs down.
It's giving you a thumbs down in the Zoom.
I know, in the Zoomies, it knows that.
Mine never does that, but it always makes me laugh when yours does that.
It's great.
Well, yeah. Today, you have chosen a court case, and I don't know anything about this court case. Without spoiling it.
Yes.
Why are we doing this?
I was looking for a court case that... I wanted to do a court case that was like a landmark court case that we hadn't talked about before.
Yeah.
That kind of had a different vibe from what we had talked about before. This was the second one I looked at. The first one I looked at, I couldn't really get a lot of details about. It would have been like a very short podcast. I mean, it was a very impactful decision. And we're going to talk about that Supreme Court case. It was the Atkins Supreme Court case. Okay. So Atkins basically ruled that, like, you couldn't put to death somebody who was mentally disturbed below a certain IQ or something like that. Yeah. But there actually wasn't, in my initial research, like a ton of background history on that case. So I was like, okay. This one had a little bit more background and some more stuff to talk about. And so I thought we would do this one, and the bonus is that we get to talk about the other case because this decision is in part based on Atkins. So
it's a twofer.
This case, which is Roper v. Simmons, is the Supreme Court case that decided that you can't put to death somebody who is underage.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And this case is...
Sure.
Yes. But we're not a murder podcast show. I mean, no, Lizzie and I both enjoy those kinds of shows.
Totally.
And TV shows and documentaries and movies and name it. We've probably seen it.
Name a documentary. I've seen it.
Yes. Uh-huh. Was watching the new one that's on Netflix about the New York crime, the five-part series, but was watching it yesterday. Love it. That's not the kind of show we are. So we'll talk a little bit about what the guy did, but like we're not going to go into the details because, it's really gory and there's no use in rehashing that.
We got to get to SCOTUS.
We got to get to SCOTUS. But it is just, it really highlights the difference of it doesn't, not killing the person who did something when they were 17 doesn't mean that they didn't do anything bad and that they didn't do anything wrong. It just means... Should the government be in the business
of killing kids?
I mean, when they would put him to death, he was no longer a child. I mean, a kid or somebody who was underage. But when he committed the crime, he was. And so that, the whole case is about mental state and the mental state of teenagers and children and decision making and peer pressure and all of that. And does the government want to be in the business of basically killing children, or in Atkins, killing people who can't make decisions for other reasons.
Or just killing.
Like, I am not a pro capital punishment person by any means.
Me that either, even mean... though I've just come back from Texas.
There you go.
Well, tell me about the sources for today.
Okay. So the sources for today are like a local Fox 2 News channel in Missouri. It was an article by Liz Dowell. Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay.
Mm.
Of course, great info, great. They actually had like a great synopsis of how this case moved through the courts. It was wonderful.
Ooh.
And then the decision by Anthony Kennedy and then Scalia's dissent.
Scalia. Man, it's been a while since I've gotten some Scalia time.
This is not, I mean, we'll read it. I was like, Scalia, come on, man. This is not one of his best. It's not.
I feel
one
like
it's
often
best.
When I read Scalia, I'm like, "This is a stretch."
It's a stretch, my guy. And then I don't think we've ever used them before. The Juvenile Law Center, because they were one of the they argued basically for this guy.
Sure.
So yeah. So those are the those are the sources for today.
All right. Well, let's start off. And again, this is not a murder podcast, but let's start off with the facts,
just to give you a sense of what happened. Yes.
Sort of set the scene of what we're dealing with, what the crime was. So, Christopher Simmons was 17 years old when he and a fellow teen killed Shirley Crook. Simmons was labeled a thrill killer, and his death penalty sentence was the subject of significant debate.
Yes. Shirley Crook was also 17.
Okay.
Yeah.
On September 9th, 1993, Simmons, who again was 17, recruited two friends, Charles Benjamin, who was 15, and John Tesmer, who was 16, to help him break into Crook's house, kidnap her, and throw her off a bridge at Castlewood State Park in St. Louis County. Tesmer, one of the other two boys, later backed out of the plan and served as a witness against Simmons and Benjamin. So yeah. Essentially it was these two boys kidnap Shirley Crook.
Yeah.
And throw her over a bridge. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's what, like, the Supreme Court case, I mean, obviously, you know, spoiler alert, the government no longer puts to death people below the age of 18. So this was decided in Simmons' favor. But there's a whole argument about, like, peer pressure and, you know, can children and adolescents and teenagers judge right from wrong and all of that. And I'm like, I think this guy knew what he was doing. Like, sure. he recruited people and, you know, he was the ringleader. And it sounds like this isn't in the notes, but it sounds like he had a bad home life.
Well, it's that thing, right? Where it's like, there's no excuse for kidnapping somebody and throwing them over a bridge, regardless of age.
Right. You planned it.
Right. Right. You premeditated.
This is premeditated. This is.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, but I think it's more of like, I wonder if it's more of comprehending consequences. Like, if you throw someone over a bridge, can you comprehend that what you're doing is killing them?
I mean, also not in the notes, but we can talk about this. She was able to loosen her ties. And she was almost able to escape, not quite, but she was able to fight back a little bit. And then they rebound her.
Yeah.
Even more.
Yeah.
So they got it. I think they totally.
Scum.
Like, you know.
Scum.
Scum. Like, I think if they didn't, by tying her up and throwing her into water, I think you know what's going to happen, right? Like, your intent is pretty clear.
Totally.
But, you know, it's just the arguments of the, not to get ahead of ourselves, but the arguments within the case are very valid. Teenagers are not fully, their brains are not fully formed, even into their people's 20s sometimes, you know, the brains are not fully formed.
Especially boys, no offense.
Especially boys.
No offense, you're slow.
Right, a little bit. But, you know.
Well, this is interesting, right? This brings up that, like, interesting point about Supreme Court cases where we're not arguing if this person is guilty of doing something heinous because obviously they are. Like,
They did it.
Yeah, they did it and it's awful and they're awful. Like, it's weird to compartmentalize what you have to do with Supreme Court cases because you're looking at this one almost theoretical piece of it, which is, is killing kids cruel and unusual punishment, basically, assume. That would be my...
Right, and that's basically what the court says. And the court says, the government shouldn't be in the business. And they have an interesting way that they get there.
Yeah.
But the government says we shouldn't be in the business of...
Killing kids. Okay. Well, let's keep going. Talk me through the court's situation.
Okay. So Christopher Simmons was sentenced to death. So he commits this crime with the help of his friend. He gets caught. He has a whole trial. He gets sentenced to death in 1993 when he is only 17. After a series of appeals to state and federal courts, which lasted until 2002, so almost 10 years later, each appeal was rejected. Then in 2002, the Missouri Supreme Court stayed Simmons' execution while the U.S. Supreme Court decided Atkins versus Virginia, which we talked about at the top, which was a case that dealt with the execution of the mentally disabled.
Mm-hmm.
And the vernacular that they used in the Atkins case, and I think it's in here a little bit, so I'm just going to say it at the top, is they call him mentally retarded. They call the guy in the in the case mentally retarded. That's the vernacular in the case. So after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that executing the mentally disabled or mentally retarded in the vernacular of the day violated the 8th and 14th Amendment prohibitions on cruel and unusual punishment because a majority of Americans found it cruel and unusual, the Missouri Supreme Court decided to reconsider Simmons' case.
Yeah, I think you have to.
Yeah, right. But this is something I think we've never seen, is that they're listening to public opinion so strongly. They're like, huh.
Right.
This case, the Supreme Court case, was decided because they literally think the public doesn't want to kill people who are not cannot mentally make their own decisions.
Right, right. Well, you have to imagine that there's, at this point, I think there's also, I mean, we're talking about the, you know, 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. We also have so much more information available. Yes. So I think it's public opinion being swayed by data science and research, which at this point, we know that people who suffer from, you know, mental disabilities or whatever, don't always understand what they're doing. And therefore, can you in any way, like, give the same consequence as somebody who has full facilities? Like, is that the same thing?
Right.
And I think it's correct to say no. Like, there has to be some, just like, I mean, it's just like the insanity plea, you know?
Oh,
like,
sure.
That's kind of what it is.
Right.
Although that gets used a little bit more, I think. I think people just try to plea being insane.
Right.
But I think the more information that we have, the more easy it is for people to form an educated opinion on who government should and shouldn't kill.
Oh, no, absolutely. I just think it's shocking that the court was like, let's listen to that.
Sure.
Like, well, that's what we're going to base our decision on. Is
this was the court like, of so public much was opinion. Going on in this court. Like, this
the
was,
court of public opinion is what we're going to listen to.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, else do you determine cruel and unusual, though?
Sure. But great.
Yeah. You know? It's a hard barometer to gauge.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So, yeah. But it's a very fascinating point.
Right. So, using the reasoning from the Atkins case, the Missouri court decided 6-3 that the U.S. Supreme Court's 1989 decision in Stanford versus Kentucky, which held that executing minors was not unconstitutional, was no longer valid. So this lower court, aka the Missouri court, looked at this prior Supreme Court decision, Stanford versus Kentucky.
From a decade prior,
which said, killing kids is cool. We're good with
all
that.
All fine and dandy. Yeah.
They looked at that case after having read the Atkins decision and said, we think that's wrong.
Yeah.
And we're going to stay this guy's execution.
Wow. Supreme Court of Missouri swinging for the fences.
Swinging for the rafters. Yikes.
I mean, again, I think that's correct. But it is interesting that only, 10 years prior, we kind of had a totally different
opinion.
Yeah. Like, what changed in 10 years, you know?
Yeah. It's wild. So the opinion in Stanford versus Kentucky had relied on a finding that a majority of Americans did not consider the execution of minors to be cruel and unusual. So again, this is what we're saying.
And I guess this is the slippery slope of listening to public opinion,
right?
Is that like it does change.
Right.
And
I'd like them to do this with other things like abortion.
I know. But then you run the risk of like which I mean, I can never see this happening, but it's swinging in the opposite way.
Right, exactly.
And I guess that's the devil's advocate thing. But yes, we have a precedent of listening to public opinion.
You can do it. I don't know why we pick and choose which cases this is valid for.
Right. Like, oh yeah, we'll kill kids, but like enough with the abortion stuff.
But enough with the abortion stuff. That's no. So the Missouri court, citing numerous laws passed since 1989 that limited the scope of the death penalty, held that national opinion had changed, finding that a majority of Americans were now opposed to the execution of minors. The court held that such executions were now unconstitutional. So the Missouri court is just like, our decision now, we're overruling SCOTUS. No. So, finding that a majority of Americans were now opposed to the execution of minors, the court held that such executions were now unconstitutional.
Yeah. They're basically like, okay, Supreme Court, we've sort of done the work here.
Yeah, we did the work for you. You're welcome.
Math ain't mathin'. I beg of you to reconsider. I mean, shout out to the Supreme Court of Missouri. Good Lord.
Yeah. I mean, they're forcing the question. They're like, overturn your own ruling.
Yeah.
This is dumb.
This isn't adding up.
Yeah. Because you did it here, so do it here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So on appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, the government argued that allowing a state court to overturn a Supreme Court decision by looking at, quote, evolving standards, end quote, would be dangerous because state courts could just as easily decide that executions prohibited by the Supreme Court, such as the execution of the mentally ill as in Atkins v. Virginia, were now permissible due to a change in the belief of the American people. So the government is arguing, like, we need to ignore Missouri, because what they're doing is they're saying, well, people don't think that this is right anymore.
Right.
But they're doing the devil's advocate. It's like, well, what if public opinion decides that we should execute the mentally ill?
Right.
Like, they're highlighting the slippery slope of adhering to public opinion.
Right, exactly. Which is valid.
It's valid.
Because the public sometimes, I'm like, I don't know about y'all.
So the question before the court becomes, does the execution of minors violate the prohibition of, quote, cruel and unusual punishment, end quote, found in the Eighth Amendment and applied to the states through the incorporation doctrine of the 14th Amendment? So, aka, is executing minors cruel and unusual?
Right. Right. That's the question.
That's the question.
So, let's talk about how they decided the case. The Juvenile Law Center filed an amicus brief with the Supreme Court of the United States on behalf of Simmons. The Juvenile Law Center's brief argued that it is unconstitutional to sentence juvenile offenders to death because adolescents and adults are developmentally different in critical areas, including impulse control and understanding the consequences of their actions. Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Me as a teenager is very different than me now.
Totally.
I am shocked at the things I used to do and that I am still alive. Quite a conundrum.
Quite a conundrum.
In a landmark ruling, the Supreme Court of the United States banned the imposition of the death penalty on individuals convicted for crimes they committed before the age of 18 as unconstitutional. The court grounded its decision in developmental and scientific research demonstrating that juveniles possess a greater capacity for rehabilitation than adults, are more susceptible to negative peer pressure, and are immature and impaired in their judgment and decision-making. The court also held that the sentence served no legitimate penological purpose when applied to juveniles. They're like, killing them doesn't teach them anything.
Well, I would also say killing adults doesn't teach them anything either. I think that's also true. Dead.
Right, right.
So it's not a deterrent. I think that's just a moot point. Right. I don't think you can learn anything after you've been
killed. I think that's true.
But go off, Supreme Court. I get it.
Right. I also think that teenagers in general are not paying attention to the court system and being and thinking, like, if I do this, the state of Missouri is going to kill me.
Right.
Like, they're not thinking that.
Right. Yeah. Again, I think it's like it's not comprehending the magnitude of consequences, which goes into like the immaturity and impairment of decision making and judgment.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's all true. And it's, you know, it's so fresh. It's frustrating and almost like difficult because it's like the crime is still so heinous, you know, and it's like it's not an excusing of the behavior. It's like there's plenty of teenagers who simply don't murder people and they manage to like get through making a decision
without it
including premeditated murder.
Right.
So I understand the like.
There was a third guy who was supposed to do this with him who decided not to.
Right. It was like, actually, I do understand the consequence of killing somebody is actually really severe.
Right. I mean, he didn't do the next step, which is tell somebody.
Yeah.
But he didn't do it.
Yeah. It's a slippery slope. Yeah. But like, I mean, I don't think we should be in the business of killing people, but that's just my opinion.
I agree.
But it doesn't indicate sympathy or, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think this is a win for Simmons in the way that like it's can be portrayed as.
I agree.
Well, let's talk about the opinion, shall we?
Yes.
In a 5-4 opinion delivered by Justice Anthony Kennedy, the court ruled that standards of decency have evolved so that executing minors is cruel and unusual punishment prohibited by the Eighth Amendment. The majority cited a consensus against the juvenile death penalty among state legislatures and its own determination that the death penalty is a disproportionate punishment for minors. Sure. Hence, cruel or unusual.
Yeah.
Finally, the court pointed to a overwhelming international opinion against the juvenile death penalty. Chief Justice William Rehnquist and Justices Antonin Scalia, Sandra Day O'Connor, and Clarence Thomas all dissented.
Yes.
And here's a quote from the court's ruling by Anthony Kennedy. It's a direct quote from what he wrote.
Yeah.
Three general differences between juveniles under 18 and adults demonstrate that juvenile offenders cannot, with reliability, be classified among the worst offenders. First, a lack of maturity and an underdeveloped sense of responsibility are found in youth more often than in adults and are more understandable among the young. These qualities often result in impetuous and ill-considered actions and decisions. The second area of difference is that juveniles are more vulnerable or susceptible to negative influences and outside pressures, including peer pressure.
Mm-hmm.
The third broad difference is that the character of a juvenile is not as well formed as that of an adult. The personality traits of a juvenile are more transitionatory, less fixed.
Yes.
These differences render suspect any conclusion that a juvenile falls among the worst offenders. The susceptibility of juveniles to immature and irresponsible behavior means that their irresponsible conduct is not as morally reprehensible as that of an adult. Their own vulnerability and comparative lack of control over their immediate surroundings mean juveniles have a greater claim than adults do to be forgiven for failing to escape negative influences in their whole environment. The reality that juveniles still struggle to define their identity means it is less supportable to conclude that even a heinous crime committed by a juvenile is evidence of irretrievably depraved character. From a moral standpoint, it would be misguided to equate the failings of a minor with those of an adult, for a greater possibility exists that a minor's character deficiencies will be reformed. They're basically saying, like, teenagers are not fully people.
Right. They're going
to
make mistakes.
These are people who are not, like, fully... they're not... just like the Atkins case.
Right.
They're not
fully there.
Fully there.
Right, right. And they're going to make mistakes, and some of them might be really bad ones.
Right.
But there's more of a likelihood that that person could be rehabilitated and that they might not have quite understood what they were doing.
Yeah.
And you can't consider them to be an adult when an adult has had a full life of experiences where they should have known what they were doing was wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess to his point, it's like, can you treat an adult, you know, Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
The same way you treat Charles Simmons.
Right.
You know, like, obviously different crimes and Ted Bundy. It's just the first name that came into my head. But like,
sure.
an adult who had committed the same crime, premeditated and all the things. Yeah. Do they get the same sentence? It's tough. Yeah. I mean, I agree with this. I think kids, teenagers are not, I mean, I think even calling it somebody 18 an adult is ludicrous at this point, because we know that the brain isn't fully developed until 21, but like,
yeah,
if 18 makes you feel better, then sure.
Then sure. I mean, it'd be a lot to change at this point in our society to call an adult 21 years old.
Sure.
Yeah. So let's read Scalia's dissent.
Oh, it's Antonin up too.
Oh my God. I was like, really? This is what you have to say about this?
I can't wait for it to be so not the point. I feel like I could make a better
argument against this decision, and I'm for this decision. And this is kind of a bullshit one. Okay. So Antonin Scalia says, quote, "The court thus proclaims itself sole arbiter of our nation's moral standards. And in the course of discharging that awesome responsibility, purports to take guidance from the views of foreign courts and legislatures." So he doesn't like that we're listening to the international.
Right, that we're saying globally no one's killing kids.
Right. He didn't
like that. So therefore we shouldn't be
killing kids. He didn't like that.
He's like, I'm sorry. Also, I love when they use the word awesome.
I know.
They describe it as this awesome responsibility. It's such a, I mean, it just like, I get it, but it's such a silly way to describe the influence and power that the Supreme Court has.
I know.
Like, this is awesome. Rock on, man.
Rock on, dudes. Go this give me a brewski.
And party on. Like, it's just silly.
"Because I do not believe that the meaning of our Eighth Amendment, any more than the meaning of other provisions of our Constitution, should be determined by the subjective views of five members of this court and like-minded foreigners, I dissent."
He's saying this is subjective. Right. But people not liking the killing of kids is subjective.
Right. Also, if you don't want to be the arbiter of this document, why are you? That's your job.
Well, but he is saying that you have to be objective. In the Constitution, does it say that cruel and unusual punishment includes the killing of kids? No. Therefore, the facts are they didn't say it included kids and killing them. Fair game.
Fair game. All right.
So buckle up your bootstraps, stop being such a whiny baby, and let's go kill some kids.
Let's go kill some kids. Stop having feelings.
Antonin.
"In determining that capital punishment of offenders who committed murder before age 18 is, quote, cruel and unusual under the Eighth Amendment, the court first considers, in accordance with our modern, though in my view mistaken, jurisprudence, where there is a, quote, national consensus," those words are important, quote, "national consensus, that laws allowing such executions contravene our modern standards of decency. The court dutifully claims half-heartedly that a national consensus has emerged since our decision in Stanford, because 18 states, or 47% of states that permit capital punishment, now have legislation prohibiting the execution of offenders under 18. And because all four states have adopted such legislation since Stanford, words have no meaning if the views of less than 50% of death penalty states can constitute a national consensus."
I see what he's doing.
He's literally saying, 47.
You're missing three states.
Right. He's like, 47.
That's not 50.
Is less than 50%.
Sure.
And I think he would say even 50% is not a consensus.
Right. But it's a mess. It's a slippery slope, right? It's like, you know, and maybe the way to appease Antonin Scalia is to, on the congressional level, the federal level, have a bill passed that's like, you can't kill kids.
Right.
Under, you know, you can't kill somebody under the age of 18.
Right.
But it does pose quite the conundrum that, let's say, you know, Texas will kill a kid, but Oklahoma won't.
Right.
You know, like that, it is a moral conundrum. And I think we see it now in terms of, like, I think the modern day context is the different, like, the different ways of execution is now becoming very varied, because lethal injection is, you're more and more becoming a very unreliable and often disturbing way to execute somebody. So states are adopting, you know, firing squad, you know, electric chair. Like, it's very all over the place that, like, I think we'll see a ruling, or I think we'll see a case at some point in the next 5-10 years that has to do with the type of execution that is allowed. Because when you get into the business of killing people and there's such a difference between states on how that's, I mean, that's messy.
Yeah.
Like, that's messy and it's disturbing and it's not how that should be. And, like, maybe it's not up to the Supreme Court to be the one who technically should be deciding that. Like, should that be decided on a federal level? Yeah, probably, ideally. But in the meantime, people are still, kids are still being executed. So we really should figure this out.
Yeah.
While we're here. All that to say, Antonin, you got us. 47% of states have adopted legislation, not 50%. You got us there. But also, it's like, how many states in the past, like, since that previous one that did say that you could kill kids, like, how many states have flipped since then? Because it also needs to be proportionate into timing, right? If it's been 18 states in 10 years, that's quite a lot to flip over.
Yeah.
So we're leaving out other numbers here.
It's true. I mean, this was also a while ago.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we don't kill kids now. So.
No, it's true. We don't kill kids now.
I feel like.
This ruling.
I feel like we like let this happen and we're like, all right, we won't kill the kids.
Right.
Fine.
I'm not going to argue this one. Who wants to go into court and argue for killing the kids?
Right.
I mean, I'm sure somebody.
Well, I mean, the loophole became, right? Like trying them as an adult. That's the loophole.
Right. That is the loophole. Yes.
So, you know, like if this was happening now, if this case happened now, they wouldn't try him as a juvenile.
No, they'd try him as an adult.
They would him as an adult to circumvent this ruling.
Right.
But back in the day, they didn't know. They were like, he's under 18. He's a juvenile.
Right.
We'll try him as a juvenile.
Right.
But we can still kill him.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, they took it away. All right, fine. He's 18.
Right.
Round up. Round it up. So let's talk about the aftermath. Christopher Lee Simmons has been incarcerated at the Northeast Correctional Center since 1994. Originally sentenced to death in 94. On August 26, 2003, after this ruling, he was resentenced to life without parole, which seems like the correct sentence.
He's not going anywhere.
No, and he never will.
And he never will. So in a lot of ways, this is worse.
Yeah.
So
it's an eye for an eye mentality.
Yeah.
And like on the one hand, I get it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's just like, it's a slippery slope when you're in the business of killing people.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't get it right every time, and that's the problem.
Yeah. And also just like from a moral standpoint, like I don't, it's right for the government to kill a kid, that that just feels not right, you know? War is one thing. Defense is one thing.
Right.
Retribution feels not right. No matter the age of the person, you know?
Right.
And it's retribution, you know, something that's not against the state even, you know, like that just feels like not.
And I understand, you know, it's like we obviously shouldn't dictate our rules in our life based on, you know, like what other global entities are doing. But it is something to note.
Yeah.
When, you know. No other or very few other advanced intellectual societies are killing people or killing kids. You know, like, especially as we, as the United States, I think globally position ourselves as like the superior, the most superior country, you know, the most number one in all things. And yet, in ways like capital punishment, I feel like it feels so behind, you know?
Yeah.
I think that is something to take into consideration. It's like, if our global partners aren't doing it, why are we? Like, truly, why are we? Anywho, all that to say, I think we got this one right. In the 90s court, 5-4. And I love a good landmark Supreme Court case.
I know. This was a good one.
It's a good one. But with that said, that is our episode on Roper v. Simmons. As always, if you like what you heard, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Let's Get Civical. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us. We love you so, so much. And we will see you next Wednesday.
Goodbye.